Things were bad in the 90s, and they're about to get worse. The Celtics have the audacity to tank.
What?
The 90s conversation continues on this Tuesday, Locked On Celtics. Millie's, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. John Corrales here of MassLive.com, thanking you once again for joining us for this deep dive, this jaunt through Boston Celtics history. We are now into the mid-90s and the ML Carr era. And this is the Boston Celtics actively trying to lose, which, as you'll hear in this discussion, is just unheard of in Boston Celtics history. It's new, it's confusing, and it doesn't even work. ML Carr comes in and takes these bullets for the team, and it's just a part of Celtics history that no one has ever really seen to this point. No one can understand. It leads to some real kind of consternation around Boston and amongst Celtics fans. This podcast is brought to you by Built Bar. It is the best tasting protein bar on the market. It tastes like a candy bar. It's covered in chocolate, and it's going to be less than 200 calories with at least 15 grams of protein. And it's going to give you the nutrients that you want from a protein bar without the extra calories, without the extra sugars. Go ahead and compare them to the leading brands. I dare you. You're going to find that they measure up quite well. If you go to BuiltBar.com, you can get $10 off with the promo code LOCKEDON. So go do that. Now, we continue our conversation as the Boston Celtics hit their rock bottom. All right, we're back with Chuck McKinney, back with Mike Dinan, RedsArmy.com, reunion of sorts, continuing our conversation about the 90s. We are now in the ML Carr era. Now, he comes in the 1994-95 season as the GM. The interesting thing about ML Carr is he actually was trying to buy the team. He'd organized an ownership group to come in and buy the team from Paul Gaston at the time. And Gaston was just not interested in selling. So Gaston was like, hey, I need a GM. You want to do that? And he said, sure, no problem. So he comes in. In 94-95, and immediately selects Eric Montross. So that's how this is going to go with ML Carr. He signs Dominique Wilkins. We talked a little bit about Dominique's season. Although somebody on Twitter, guys, was like, you guys better talk about Dominique Wilkins.
Okay.
So Dominique Wilkins was a Celtic. That's about all I can tell you, but he was a Celtic. He was okay. He was 18 points a game. It was very much a shell of Dominique, but he was a Celtic. I don't know. Anything stand out from the Dominique year?
Just the fact he was here. I mean, I think we all knew that we weren't getting his best. He was what, 35? I think he was that old.
I think so, yeah.
You know, we had seen his best, you know, 7 years earlier, against the Celtics and Larry and such, but I think we knew we weren't getting his best. It was just, and I think it was a signing just to kind of prop up the fan base a little bit. But the smart fans knew what was about to transpire. I mean, we knew what was happening. As ML Carr came in, we knew that it was going to get ugly. And this team needed to rebuild. So I don't know anybody who got excited about Dominique at the time. And anyone who's still excited about Dominique now has even bigger problems.
Well,
all you can say about him is that he did lead the team in scoring.
Well, I mean, he's a legend, and even legends, you know, at the end of their career, still have the potential to know how to put the ball in the hole. I mean, that was what he did best, and even at just under 18 points a game, that was his worst scoring output of his career. Of course, it was. It was at the end of his career. But
yeah.
Hey, some people still like that team. That's their choice. All right, that's the Dominique Wilkins discussion. I got nothing else, man. I got nothing else about Dominique. ML Carr, after the 94-95 season, fires Chris Ford. He is on the search for a head coach and decides, you know what? I'm going to do it. And makes himself the head coach and general manager for 2 years. And doesn't do it with any illusions like, I'm going to turn this thing around. He is doing this knowing that he's pushing on that throttle. He's pushing that steering down, and he's taking this thing into the ground. Like, he knows that these 2 years that he's going to go through, he's going to get himself a check as a general manager. He's going to get himself a check as the head coach. He's not going to put somebody else through it with some grand illusion of, like, you're going to be here for the turnaround. He's going to steer this thing into the ground. He's going to get a little extra money for it, and then he's going to step aside in 2 years. He knows all of this up front, and he delivers on exactly that.
I mean, this was the original process, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Right. We just, you know, I don't know. I mean, ML seems like a great guy. He's been involved with the organization, you know, in different capacities for many years. But I don't think we ever looked at him and say, wow, you know, he's got the vision for the team. There was nobody rallying behind ML, at least as far as I can recall. But you knew it was an obvious tank job, and, you know, and you just hope for the best with the.
I don't know.
No.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. ML conducted an exhaustive search for him. But in the end, yes, he did go with himself, because then he didn't have to give anybody instructions on how to lose.
Right, right. And lose he did. And Chuck's right. Like, this is the original process. And it wasn't like there was a ton of, you know, Sam Hinkie type of research that went, like, it was just, look, we know where we are. We have suffered through the tragic losses of two players who ML said, if those two guys were, you know, didn't die, then this team would have been competitive in the 90s. This is a team that is forced into transition through poor decisions, poor hires, poor leadership, and the worst luck in franchise history. So ML says he's the reset button. He's the human reset button. And he, in his first year, goes 33-49. The 95-96 Celtics, they are dead last. They're terrible. They begin the process, and then the next year they are, what, 15? They had 15 wins, 15-67 in the next year. But in the meantime, it wasn't all bad. He made little signings that seemed to be okay. Like, getting Dana Barros was a decent move. Drafting Eric Williams wasn't bad. I mean, maybe not with the 14th pick, but Eric Williams was a decent player.
But those are moves you make after you have a nucleus, right? When those moves are made before you have a nucleus,
right,
they're just signings. Like, you look back, you're like, yes. I mean, I loved Eric Williams when he was at Providence, and then when he played here. Like, when there are three stud players and you have an Eric Williams, there's his value, right? But at the time, you're just like, okay, it's Eric Williams. He's a good player. Yeah. But you still knew that they needed those top two guys. So, you know, I get what you're saying, but and on a team like that, he's just another guy.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Boston Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
protein bars are one of those things that you're almost flying blind when you walk down the aisle. There's just so many different options and so many different labels. It's hard to know which one to get. The labels can be even confusing. And I'll just tell you this. Built Bar is going to give you a delicious candy bar-like protein bar that is low in calories, high in protein, and low in all the other stuff. That's all you need to know. If you really want to make a comparison, go ahead and grab one of the competitors. Go ahead and grab a Clif Bar. I mean, those everybody knows, oh, Clif Bar, that's a protein bar. Make a comparison. Grab one of those, grab a Built Bar, and put them side by side and see. What you're going to find out is a Clif Bar gives you a ton of added sugar, a ton of added carbs, ton of added stuff that you do not want. Built Bar is going to give you that great taste like you're eating a candy bar covered in 100% chocolate, but it's protein, low calorie, and low carb, none of the extra stuff that you think is going to ruin your workout. You're not going to go work out, have one of these things, and say, oh, I regret this. You're not going to regret having a Built Bar. And there are options. If you've got a nut allergy, no problem. There are options for you. Gluten sensitivity, no problem. There are options for you. You can have one of these as a snack. You can have one for breakfast. You can have one after a workout. You can do all of those things. It's a protein bar that you can feel good eating. And you can get them for $10 off your first purchase at BuiltBar.com. Go to BuiltBar.com. Check it out for yourself. You can see the comparisons. You can see the flavors. You can see the options. You can pick a flavor you think you'd like. You can pick a box that mixes them up so you can sample a bunch of them. I've tried them all. I like them all. I really do. There are some sweeter ones. There's some fruity ones. There's peanut butter. There's coconut. I really like the coconut one. It's like eating like a Milky Way bar. But there are things for everybody. If you don't like a lot of chocolate, go for one of the fruitier ones. If you don't like that, go for one of the chocolate or the peanut butter ones. There are options for everybody. And again, $10 off your first purchase with the promo code LOCKEDON. Use the promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com for $10 off your first purchase.
The only thing at that point, it was bad. I mean, even if you understood that what the plan was here, as a fan, if you put up with that, the only thing that was bad is that they had just opened the Fleet Center. That was ML's first year as a coach, the first year of the Fleet Center, now TD Garden. And, you know, it didn't make for a warm welcome to the fans to the new building. It was kind of like for a while there was not a good feeling about that building. And took a little while to come around. Of course, as soon as the team started winning later, then people started feeling good. Now, I'm mentioning this because now we have like the most well-known, crazy, rabid fan base, home court advantage in the league.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember the early days of the Fleet Center / Shawmut Center / what else was it called?
There was one more.
I think
there was one more.
I feel like there was one more. I don't know if it was. I forget what it was. I'll figure it out. But yeah, at that point there was nothing that they could do. That 95-96 season, that first year under ML Carr, it was what it was. And they were bad. They were supposed to be bad. They accomplished it, and they get the sixth pick in the draft, and they get Antoine Walker out of it. That's the draft where, you know, that was a decent player. Antoine was good for the Boston Celtics. He was an all-star. I mean, that it was funny to watch The Last Dance and see Michael Jordan, you know, sitting there as like, oh, I'm the old guy, and have Antoine Walker looking at him like, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, that's also the draft where, you know, Antoine went ahead of Kobe, went ahead of Steve Nash, went ahead of, there was another one in there that I'm forgetting. But so as good as Antoine was, the Celtics did have a couple of misses in that draft. But getting Antoine Walker was pretty good. Antoine Walker's rookie year was decent. He came out of the gates 17.5 points per game. He wasn't chucking a ton of threes quite yet. That comes later. That's in the next decade discussion. But the early Antoine Walker, I got a sense of like, hey, this guy could be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm there with you too. He had so much potential, like with his versatility, right? You could see him rebound. He was not afraid to rebound. He could offensive rebound. He had some sort of playmaking ability. He was a chucker. He became a chucker, but he wasn't afraid to pass, or he wasn't allergic to passing. So I think you could see sort of like, wow, he's got a nice, he could have this nice, well-rounded game. So that was, I think, the allure with Walker. He was young and he was coming off of a Kentucky championship team, or he was a key part of a Kentucky team, right? So he came in, obviously, you said he was number six. So he came in with, some credentials, but sure. You could tell he was young, but you know, it was like we could polish this diamond and we could have ourselves a really good player.
Yeah, that was it. He was something for the fans to get excited about because he did have some breakout games. You know, and you could see that if he was making his shots, it would be a good night for him.
Yeah, and he had the flair. He had the flair, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The shimmy came a little later, but like you said, Mike, we're looking for something.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Antoine had it going, he wasn't shy, and that was fun. He just was, you know, life support for the franchise at the time.
And Antoine Walker came as part of a trade that ML made with the Dallas Mavericks. So this was okay. He traded Eric Montross and a pick for the pick that became Antoine and a pick that later became Ron Mercer, which I was excited about the Ron Mercer selection. We'll talk about that later. But I thought Ron Mercer is one of those guys that I thought, man, this guy's going to be good. He's going to have a long career. I thought he's going to be good. And maybe it didn't quite go as I thought it would, but I was a big Ron Mercer fan.
Yeah, me too. Well, like you said, we'll talk about him later, but he reminded me of Reggie Lewis, just in the way he just seemed so smooth offensively. I was like, this guy's going to – he can score 23, 25 points in his sleep, but, you know, we know what happened there. So at least that was me. I was like, he just seemed like such a smooth, polished offensive player. I have no idea what his percentages were, but that's what I thought of when I saw him play. But anyway.
Yeah.
They had some guys who could play. The thing was lack of consistency.
Yeah. So
people like Ron Mercer, yeah, he could have a breakout night and then the next night have, you know, a few points, 3 points.
Follow us on our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram. So the 96-97 season
Before we go on to that, can I just throw out the AC Earl tidbit that I had?
Oh, please. Yes, please.
It happened in the 95-96 season. For those who heard the earlier show, AC Earl was a draft pick for the Celtics. Nobody knew who he was, really. And he came in and he was one of the slowest players you've ever seen. And he was with Boston for 2 years and never did anything. He didn't even average 5 points. So he got selected by the Raptors when they were founded, and it was an expansion draft. The Celtics didn't protect him. The Raptors took him. And that season, he came in to the Fleet Center with the Raptors and dropped 40 points on the Celtics.
That's right.
And
I had buried that in my memories. That's right.
As soon as you said came into the Fleet Center, I was like, oh, he's sick.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the record for a while, I think, for a visiting player.
It was the building record.
I mean, nobody could believe what we were seeing because there was no indication of that. And here's the other part of that. The next highest game he had in his career was 23 points.
Jeez.
So, AC Earl, revenge game.
Literally.
That was what the 90s were like.
I guess so. The microcosm of the 90s, that you get rid of AC Earl and he comes back and drops 40 on you. That's how bad things were. That next season, that 96-97 season, is that's the worst season in Celtics history, right? That 15 loss. Yeah, they, because that 2006-2007 season was only 24 losses. So 15 wins is the worst season in Celtics history. And I will say that ML tells the story of people sending him death threats, that people were, and this is pre-Twitter. So this isn't like people tweeting out death threats, which any idiot can do. This is someone had to take pen to paper, find his address, go to the post office, mail this thing. That was a real effort to send a threat like that back then. And he tells the stories about, like, his assistant was in tears and she's reading these letters and people are going to see his mom and they're trying to dig up dirt on him. People were, like, losing their minds over this, the worst season in Celtics history. But, I mean, he knew what it was going to be like, even though it was more difficult than he imagined. That was something that it was a not so secret thing, that we're going to not be great, but we're building towards something. When you called it the process, Chuck, at least Philly embraced that process. Philly, yeah. Boston, over, they were not prepared to embrace any process. And, you know, you wonder if they were a little bit more forthcoming about, like, this is going to be our plan and just bear with us while we go through it. Look, kind of like Philly did, but I don't know. People are always going to take this thing too seriously, but that was a tough stretch for ML Carr, even knowing that the team was not going to be good.
I mean, it seems. I'm sorry, Mike. Go ahead.
Sorry, Chuck. Yeah, to your point, John, ML himself used the phrase "the Celtics are championship driven," you know, and that got thrown back at him over and over again by the media. What are you talking about, ML? ML's nickname became Many Losses.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah. And everyone knew what was up. It was all about tanking for Tim Duncan.
Well, and, that's what I was going to jump on, Mike. It was like, yeah. I don't recall it being so throughout the season, it didn't have like that, you know, that suck for luck sort of quality to it, like the Colts had, where it was so obvious to everybody. But I felt like by the time the draft rolled around, everybody knew that Duncan was far and away the top player there, right? I mean, but it just seemed like we should have known that in October, that Duncan was coming out, that he was the clear cut number one guy, and why, regardless of what championship driven nonsense the organization is feeding you, why we couldn't have kind of just focused on that. And I guess it's just different time. We were used to winning and we didn't even want to have the patience of rebuilding. We just wanted to suddenly be great again. I don't get it.
Well, the banners were hanging overhead and people, fans would go to the games and expect to see wins. And that was just our mentality. We were used to winning. Even now, after some down years, there weren't, in 97, it wasn't that bad yet. You know, it was, the 90s were going downhill. This was the rock bottom and nobody could accept that. It's that simple. I mean, we just weren't used to this kind of a season and I think nobody could believe it. They were actively trying to lose.
We're going to continue this line of thought tomorrow as we explore this notion that the Boston Celtics dared tank. How dare the mighty Boston Celtics tank? Now, I can say this now as a guy who's in his late 40s, and you say, okay, yeah, sure, of course. Like, I now cover this team. Professionally, I cover this team, and it makes sense. Like, that stuff makes sense. We've gone through the process. It makes sense. But in that moment, when I was in my 20s, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I was pissed. So, yeah, it's a confusing time. So this conversation continues, and then later in the week, Rick Pitino shows up. And that's an interesting time. Remember to subscribe if you haven't, so you can get this directly to your device as they are published. If you've subscribed, then great. Give that 5-star rating. Give that good written review that we need very much to keep this show as the number one Boston Celtics podcast out there. Really appreciate the fact that you have given those ratings and reviews. If you have not, if you're one of the people who have not, I'd very much appreciate the fact that you would. So please go do that. Also, please go to BuiltBar.com and give these Built Bars a try. I've tried them and I like them. I just leave it at that. I like them. They're covered in chocolate. They're chewy. They're delicious. And they give you the protein that you want in a protein bar without the calories, without the sugar, without the carbs. You can just have them for breakfast. You can have them after a workout. You can have them as a snack. They're not going to ruin your nutrition. They're not going to ruin what you're trying to do health-wise. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you're going to get $10 off your first order. Now, go ahead and tell your smart device to listen to the latest episode of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast.